You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Hey guys, welcome to the Reinvest Studio here for episode 60 of the Reinvest Podcast. Got an awesome episode today in person. So excited to jump in, and we're going to be talking today about the real estate market versus the stock market and some of those financial instruments and how those compare and contrast to each other. And so hopefully we can settle the score of a long debate today. With us in the studio is principal and owner of Rust Belt Capital, which is a Midwest real estate investing firm, and you're a native of Northwest Ohio, Stephen Speck. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Actually, Stephen, he was on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast, and I wish I would have looked up what episode, but we'll put it in the show notes if you want to go back and listen to that. He was on our Live from Best Ever conference episode.
That was out in Salt Lake City, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that was out in Salt Lake City. So we got to interview him live there. And so we had a great conversation, and so we kind of brought him live in person this time in our studio to actually have a proper podcasting session.
Well, at this point, I mean, I think we can use the word friend. Can we use that word?
I hope so. Absolutely, right? Yeah.
No, it's been cool, man, to meet somebody like-minded in the real estate investing space. And you know, your story is exciting because of your background before getting into real estate, which we'll get into that here in a little bit. But just on the Salt Lake City thing, we had a great trip, great time. I would recommend to any of our listeners, get outside of your bubble and go to a real estate conference. It doesn't have to be the best ever conference. There's so many out there. I mean, at this point, you can throw a dart and hit a real estate conference. But just do it. Get outside of your bubble that way, because it exposes you to ideas that are a lot bigger than what you're getting access to maybe with your meetups or the people that you're running with. And you want to be the dumbest guy in the room or gal, right? That's the hope, is to surround yourself with that kind of caliber of people, which I felt like we were able to do there. So
change your environment.
Yeah.
Changing your environment. Anytime that I feel like I'm getting stagnated in something, it's just, I need to change my environment, get around different people, different thinking, and just mess up the boring day-to-day life that I'm living.
You changed your environment so much that you were like kayaking in like Glacier National Park or something.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Did that. Went to Montana this year. Went bear hunting.
Did you get anything?
Did not get a bear. No. Oh, well, man. I got my buddy, he wanted a bear really bad. And so we were going to Glacier National Park then, and there was a gift shop, and he went back to the truck, and I saw this like teddy bear or whatever. Black
teddy bear. So I bought it.
I walked up. Dude, I could not keep a straight face. I'm like, Steve-O won't let you down. Here's your bear, buddy.
Yogi Bear State Park.
Yeah. He was like, thanks. You're welcome.
You need to like, when you go to Myrtle Beach, you buy like the shark tooth or something. You need to like buy a bear claw, you know, and just kind of carry it around with you. But no, awesome stuff today. So Stephen, give us the genesis of your story kind of leading up to your involvement in real estate investing.
And why, and give us the qualifications of why we're even going to talk about the stock market.
Yeah.
Do you have any knowledge of the stock market?
None. No.
Today's going to be a bust of an episode.
Genesis. Wow. That's a big word. Biblical word, but whatever.
Amen.
Yeah. So, long story short, grew up on about a 1,000-acre farm here in Northwestern Ohio, and I thought I was going to do commodity trading when I went to university. Went and worked for Cargill, a very large agricultural commodity trading company.
And maybe explain what commodity trading is for our listeners.
Yep. So commodity trading is like any raw ingredients. So it could be iron ore, it could be oil, it could be corn, wheat, and soybeans, which is what I kind of specialized in. So went out, did an internship with them. Also worked in Chicago as a commodities broker, and I realized I don't really like the trading business because you have to continue to trade in order to make money, which is very stressful. It's a lot of work, and it's not the opportunity vehicle that I wanted.
And how old were you at this time that you were in Chicago doing this?
I don't know, my really early 20s.
Okay.
Really early 20s. I'm 28 right now.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's like my last year of university, and I'm like, is not what I want to do. I want to, but I still like markets and economics and finance and stuff like that.
You like the aspects of it, but you didn't like the grind, how it was in perpetuity.
Yeah. You know, you have to continuously make trades and stuff like that. Right. And your risk is just really, really high. And so I'm just like, and there wasn't a bunch of opportunities to kind of eventually have your own business and own shop and,
right.
and own your own time. So I didn't really like that. So I'm looking for other stuff to do. And, I thought about investing. I had invested before, but I really didn't know too much about it. And trading and investing is different.
Right.
Trading is not the same as investing.
So what distinction would you make on that?
Investing is like you're looking at the fundamentals of the asset that you're buying, right? And you're looking at it for a long period of time. Versus trading, I'm looking at the movements. You can still look at fundamentals, but you're looking at the movements in valuation and in a short period of time.
It's transactional.
Very transactional. And so a lot different. So I didn't have this the skill set or the tool set. So I had to go and get that skill set, go and get that tool set. And I literally started teaching myself everything I could know about Excel. So for financial modeling, valuation, stock analysts or stock analysis and stuff like that. And it took years.
Yeah. That's like, I mean, you're getting into the weeds on a lot of stuff. It's very high level.
Yeah.
Pretty complex stuff. You're past the 101.
Yeah. So like a three statement, how do you do, you got the income statement, the cash flow statement and the balance sheet, right? Mm-hmm. And any business has that. And how do you analyze that? How do you break it down? And how do you find what a company's free cash flow is?
Right.
So free cash flow is how you value any type of asset, right? And if you can figure that out, then you can put a value on a company. And so that's how it works with the stock market. That's how you work and do valuations. That's what investment bankers do. That's what equity analysts are doing, is they're taking the income statement, the cash flow statement, and they're trying to figure out what their free cash flow is.
So I mean, put that into like real estate terms, right? Free cash flow. I mean, that would just be the net cash flow, right? That you would get from a property or an asset.
Yep. Yep. So basically what I just said about, you know, looking at companies, stocks or whatever, sounds pretty complicated, right? And so that's a really good segue into real estate, right? Real estate is a business, at least what we buy. We buy large multifamily properties. So we buy a business, but it's a very simple business, right? There's not a whole lot of moving parts.
Right.
And the product that we're selling is what I would call inelastic. Now, your academics might say housing's elastic or whatever, but realistically, the product that we buy is inelastic, meaning that's an economic term, meaning that the price can move quite a bit, but people still need to buy it. Kind of like insulin. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the price of insulin is.
Right.
You people still got to buy it.
There's always a demand on housing.
Yeah.
Especially for multifamily, which is where Rust Belt Capital focuses.
Yep. So I would say we're not necessarily a real estate investment firm first. We're an investment firm that specializes currently in real estate.
Yeah.
And we specialize in it because it's a simple asset. We can use leverage and we can use time. So studied a lot of Warren Buffett. Everybody does. Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, in this time of figuring out investing. And you kind of figure out some really core good principles.
Yeah.
Right? And so to be successful in investing, you need three things.
Okay.
You need good assets.
Location, location, location.
No.
Sorry, it's my real estate background.
There you go. You need a good assets, leverage, and time. And typically people screw up in one of these three things.
Mm.
They either don't get a good asset, they don't know how to use leverage, or they don't know how to do time. Wow. So when we look at the stock market, right? Everybody hears about diversification, right? Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett says diversification is a hedge against ignorance. And he's not saying that to insult anybody, but what diversification simply is doing is saying, I don't know how to do the due diligence, so I'm going to buy a small portion of the best business in town and the worst business in town, and I hope that the best business does better than the worst business and offsets my losses.
Right.
That's what diversification is.
Yeah.
So when I got into investing, I'm like, I'd rather just figure out how to do the due diligence and evaluation and forget about the crappy companies, the crappy businesses in town. I only want to invest in the good businesses in town.
That makes sense.
And so you have to study that. And
right.
There's the three statement models, you know, income statement, cash flow statement, balance sheet. Okay. What's next? What's one more principle that I can add to the three principles, which is good assets, leverage, and time? Simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
The more simple a business is,
the more scalable it is,
the less risky it is.
Okay.
less risky it is.
Gotcha.
So we want to minimize risk as much as possible.
Well, and going back to your earlier statement, right? So, you know, one of the discontents that you had about the stock brokering and the commodities trading was it was the opposite of passive. It was incredibly active.
Very.
And so, you know, for you personally, looking at real estate, you know, those principles that you mentioned are true for your investors. They're true for you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a passive nature to real estate too, that maybe seemed appealing in conjunction with the fundamentals you mentioned.
So think of this. If you're a trader and you have a heck of a good trade on, you're, right. you're up, say you're doing 10 to one, you got a 10 bagger in the Peter Lynch's, terminology, 10 baggers when you have a 10 to one return, right?
Oh, I knew what a 10 bagger was.
There you go. There you go. So I got 10K down. I've turned 10K into 100K. What if you got an investment instead of that's one trade? What if that was an investment and I didn't have to exit my position and that position mm-hmm. would just continue to pay me
right.
forever?
Right.
That's yes. the difference between trading and investing.
Yes.
And that's where I'm like, dude.
Yes.
I need to be an investor.
So what do you say about the people that invest in mutual funds or are just throwing it in their 401k and letting some company direct where those funds are going? So, I mean, where does that fall in the balance between the stock market, investing in real estate?
A great question. So back to the three principles, good assets, leverage, and time. If you put it into a mutual fund, if you put it into an ETF, you can't use leverage.
Right. That's true.
This is a big problem.
Yeah, that is a big problem.
Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, used leverage, a lot of it.
So explain how they use leverage.
Well, but with a 401k, you could still leverage it.
Borrow against it. You can't
borrow against it.
Well, yeah. The thing that you want to be careful about is mark to market, right? So quotation risk. In the stock market, or if you're borrowing against something that has quoted a market price every day, mm-hmm. you have quotation risk, right? So you can get
it can fluctuate.
Yeah, basically you can get a margin call. Mm-hmm. And we had to deal with that in commodity brokerage
gotcha.
Because you're highly leveraged.
Yep. Mm.
Commodities are highly leveraged.
So and that's kind of, you know, one of the benefits. Real estate typically is not highly liquid, right? But the benefit of that is it's kind of a trade-off. Maybe it's not highly liquid like it would be, you know, a treasury or the stock market, but it also means there's stability, right, in the equity that you have in those properties. Like it would be very uncommon for a massive fluctuation in real estate to happen like it would maybe a company in the stock market.
And even if it does, it doesn't, as long as it's a cash flowing property,
right?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. The bank's not going to call that.
Yeah.
Call that loan if your debt service is okay and you're making money.
And you have ways to fight them.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to fight them versus when your broker calls and you have a margin call. Doesn't matter, man. You got 24 hours.
Right. Oh gosh. Wow. Seriously.
Yeah.
It kind of puts some fire under you.
Do they take IOUs?
I wish. No, dude, we're going to close you out and it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Holy cow. Okay. That's savage. So let's,
And it's not necessarily them. It's the government making the rules.
Wow.
Because they're trying to get away from what happened in the Great Depression with the stock market crash and stuff like that.
Right. Right. They had to change the regulations surrounding that.
Yeah.
So which one outperforms which? I mean, we've talked about some of the benefits of this, you know, real estate versus stock market, but which one outperforms the other?
Yeah, they're structurally, they're two completely different investments, right? And so your real estate is almost always, as long as you follow those three core principles that I said, it's almost always going to outperform the stock
mm-hmm.
market,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you, as long as you can do the good asset, once you put that leverage in place, that's the whole point of leverage,
right?
Is just boom, enhance your returns.
Right.
So real estate's going to outperform the stock market over 10 years, as long as it's a good asset, almost every single time.
Right. And you've got the unicorn companies and stuff like that. No one's saying that you can't make a lot of money in the stock market, but
certainly
it's the long-term foundation that people build wealth upon.
I'm not a gambler, right? So like, I'm not trying to pick the stock market. To me is an investment, opportunity or investment arena. It's mm-hmm. not a casino to me. Mm-hmm. So sure, I own stocks and I can do financial analysis on them. So I'll pick the best that I know to pick.
Yeah.
But I can't use leverage, right? Or I could, but then I could get a margin call at any point in time because any day the price is determined by the marginal investor. It's not determined by what the actual value of the company is.
So we get this question comes up on this topic quite a bit. So people say, okay, yeah, I get it. Maybe, you know, in 10 years, the real estate market will outperform the stock market, but real estate's more risky. What would you say to somebody who's got that critique?
Yeah. I mean, our investors, I've heard that comment quite a bit. People have asked, and I tell them, first of all, I'm about as risk averse as it can get. Okay? I hate risk. Okay. I think you asked me a question about this at Best Ever about cryptocurrency investing. I'm like, dude,
what idiot would invest in that? I got real quiet. Those guys.
But it comes down to what Buffett said, right? He said, diversification is a hedge against ignorance. And so the same thing comes down to it is, if you know how to do the due diligence in real estate, the risk is very, very, very low. Okay. Just like if you don't know how to do the due diligence in the stock market, I mean, you're using diversification to help you out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that.
Right. Right.
I'd rather learn how to do the due diligence, and that's how you reduce your risk, is increase your knowledge.
I think one of the things that people are contending with right now in the real estate side of things is it's been hyped up. There's a lot of attention on it.
Yep.
And I think, you know, maybe in part because people haven't had success in the stock market like they want, or they know they need to diversify, or there's just more attention on it through platforms like Bigger Pockets, you know, that have kind of like put this in front of people. Mm-hmm. And with that, it's easy to jump into something, think you know what you're doing, and then realize you don't actually understand the fundamentals of it. And that's, you know, we've talked about this in past episodes before, where sometimes it gets oversold. Like, oh, real estate, you got to do it. You know, you can make a ton of money. It's easy, you know, to make money in real estate. And in actuality, it's challenging. The principles are simple, but to actually have the discipline to walk those out is very difficult.
Well, yeah. I think the perception of it being risky usually comes from a lack of knowledge. Because like what you said, I mean, really when you get down to it and you're investing in real estate and some multifamily assets, or whether it's self-storage or single family, the formula is pretty simple.
Very.
Yeah.
And it's replicable, and that's why people do it at scale, and that's why, you know, there's all these companies that do it. And so the risk comes from not understanding the process.
Yep.
And people always want to go to the worst case scenario, and we hear this a lot. What if you can't, what if no one moves into your property? What if your property, something happens and you're at 50% vacancy? Those are like unicorn scenarios where something would happen and then we'd be able to fix it. But it's like, it's usually these crazy scenarios that aren't realistic at all.
Crazy and I'm like, hypotheticals.
Crazy hypotheticals, but they're willing to put their money in the stock market with an asset they can't see, they can't control, zero decision making. Mm-hmm. There's zero levers they can pull to change the outcome of a stock they're invested in.
Think about this. When COVID happened, Apple lost 50, I think it was like 50% of its value. And then by the end of the year, it was up 100%.
That is volatile.
How does a company change that much in value? Like,
right, exactly.
And like, if you're scared, the liquidity.
And it's all because of public perception too. I feel like
the marginal investor is the one determining the price.
Right.
And
exactly.
If you're scared and you have liquidity, the problem with liquidity is if you don't have the stomach to hold on, you're going to lose money.
Yeah.
Because you're going to jump out and then guess what? You've locked in your loss.
You described my cryptocurrency experience. Yeah.
So
no crypto.
Well, and so when people are talking about real estate, if it's risky, if you know what you're doing, or if you partner with someone who actually knows what they're doing, which there's been a lot of maybe false operators out there in the last few years.
Tons.
And now we're starting to hear the stories of these people who thought they knew what they're doing or faked what they knew what they were doing. And now we're realizing the fundamentals weren't sound.
Right.
They're losing properties. They're losing money. They're losing investor returns. But for those that actually know what they're doing, it's not as risky as a stock market, really, because there's more we can control within real estate.
That's true.
So that's why I say we're an investment firm first, real estate second, because a lot of people who are like real estate investors, they don't understand the investment principles.
Yeah.
And so like, it's all about reduce risk. Okay. So I don't want quotation risk. I'm not going to invest in stock. I'm not going to use leverage in the stock market. Okay. I want to make sure that I can hold on to this property. I'm going to have a big cash reserve.
Yep. The capital preservation.
Yep. Make sure that's there. I want to make sure that I can actually pay the mortgage on this thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? I diversify my revenue stream across the property, meaning I have more than one source of income. You buy a single family house. Guess what? As a rental, you have one source of income. If they don't pay that month, how are you going to pay?
That's true.
If we buy in statistics, you need 30, right? And I think it's Bayesian statistics. You need 30 in order for it to actually start working, a sample size of 30. Okay. If we buy a property that's 60 doors, statistics does work. Our 95% occupancy calculation, when we underwrite it, it actually, it's there.
Right.
And therefore, we don't have to worry about one person not paying or moving out or whatever. And like, we've already accounted for that. So if everybody pays, guess what? That's a bonus to us. And actually we have properties that everybody's paying. We're outperforming because of it.
And you said at one of your properties, you're 100% occupied right now.
Yeah. 100% occupied.
Which is also bonus money because in every model anybody would ever do, they're always accounting for some level of vacancy, whether it's 5 or 7%, or if you're doing a heavy lift, 10% or whatever that would be. So having it fully occupied, again, is another bonus to the bottom line, another bonus to the investors, and you know, kind of patents the bank account in case something were to happen to the property.
So we look at it, and I think our CPA, our accountant, found it a little bit interesting how I do our financials or whatever, but I'm like, cost of goods sold, right? That's a very, very like finance investment banker type idea.
Terminology,
So cost of goods sold is like, I look at our doors multiplied by the number of months, and that's the total number of units we have to sell, units of a product to sell. Mm-hmm. And what is our cost of those products, right? So when we do occupancy at, you know, whatever it is, we look at how many units, which is months of
revenue,
housing, right, that we can provide.
Yeah.
How many units do we have? And so that's a way different way of looking at it.
That is a different way of looking at it.
See, but what I was excited about today, Stephen, is sometimes like the real estate guys, they bleed real estate. They don't know something other than that.
Yeah.
You're in real estate, but it's because you were an investor first.
Yep.
And you're like, but this makes sense. And so you know why it makes sense, but some real estate guys don't know why it makes sense even though they're doing it.
Yes.
And so you're able to tie it back to some of the bigger stuff, which I think is so valuable.
So so you were in the kind of headed down the investor banker path. You were doing the commodities trading. When did you exit that realm and start getting into multifamily real estate? Because I know you probably did some personal investing before that in real estate and had a couple of your personal deals.
I bought a single family rental and stuff like that. And it wasn't intentional. I was at an auction and
accidentally bought it.
That's hilarious.
So when did you exit kind of that realm officially and transition into multifamily real estate?
Once I had demonstrated with my own portfolio over a period of time that I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Got to prove a concept.
Yeah. Prove to myself, right? Mm-hmm. You're your own biggest critic. Do I actually know what I'm doing? I'm a major ding dong. And
figured out you weren't.
Apparently I know what I'm doing. Let's go. And so then 2 or 3 years ago, I partnered with Nate, my partner at Rust Belt Capital, and we went out and first property was a 64 unit apartment complex, and a lot of learning on that for sure. But, by all measures, it's been an incredibly good investment for everybody.
Wow. Now, was this the property that off mic we were talking about that you're outpacing your pro forma?
Yeah, by a ton.
By a ton.
Like, yeah.
This was the one where you had bought it and you were already prepared to be able to give 8% to the investors.
Cash return.
So, let's maybe talk about this deal a little bit. You bought it in what year, 2020?
2021.
Yeah. So things are already taking off in the real estate market, especially in multifamily. Mm-hmm. Okay. So why don't we talk about how you found this deal? What method you used to source the deal? And then can you maybe just give us a little details on that? So for anybody out there looking to get into real estate investing and you're thinking you can't because it's a hot market, 2021 was already.
It's been a hot market.
So don't use that excuse. Throw that out the window. For anybody thinking to get into multifamily real estate, just kind of to give them some nuggets of how your first deal looked. even though it was pretty ambitious as a 64 unit.
Yeah, sure. That is ambitious.
It's all about, first of all, you want to know the terminology. You want to know, because you're going to get interviewed by the seller to make sure that you're a qualified buyer, right? They're not just typically going to sell it to anybody.
Right.
So understand what a cap rate is, or understand, you know, occupancies and what is debt service coverage ratio and stuff like that. So once you got that down, then it's literally about knocking on doors. You are a salesperson. Mm-hmm. Sell me your property. That's your sales call.
Okay? Right.
And so who are your leads? Your leads are bankers. Talk to the bankers. They need to be your friend, right? Mm-hmm. They're your largest investor is the banker.
Yeah, okay? That's true.
So go find them. Talk to them. Let them know what you're doing. Talk to them frequently. And then literally go look up all of the multifamily properties in your area that you're looking for in that, you know, 40 to 100 doors or whatever it is, and send them letters, call them, send them letters, call them again and again and again.
How did you source this first deal then?
Relationship with the banker.
So this banker knew the seller.
The property had already, they tried to sell the property two times before. Both times they fell through. I heard that the property was going to sell or that he was interested in selling it. Called him up. Introduced myself, told him I was interested.
Directly to the seller. You called directly to the seller. Okay.
Correct. Yep. And told him I was interested. He did some like basically some interview questions, like I said, to make sure that I was a qualified buyer.
This was not on market. This was off market.
Off market. Yeah.
Okay.
And I knew everything that he, you know, every question that he threw at me, I handled it very, very well. And he's like, seemed very, very sharp. And I told him, here's the price that we're going to do. And I think I gave him a LOI. By the end of that day, he's like, okay, signed it. We had a purchase agreement because Nate's a lawyer. So we had a purchase agreement written up within 24 hours in front of him.
Wow.
Kept a purchase agreement as simple as possible. Protect both sides, but simple as possible.
Yep.
And I think it took us less than a week to get a purchase agreement signed and 3 days to get all the money that we needed.
And what was the raise for that property, your first property?
Like $900K.
Nice.
3 days.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. So
we closed ahead of schedule and we didn't do any type of reneging or any bad things.
Which is important because, you know, a lot of people who are on the buying side of things, they get short-sighted. There's a time to renegotiate a price on a property, right? There's legitimate reasons to be able to do that. But from a business practice standpoint, you want to maintain relationships because most of the time, if someone's selling a property, there's a pretty good chance that they have another property or that they know people in that space that could be another deal source for you.
Yeah.
And so you want to treat and nurture that relationship well and do that with professionalism because it may be another referral for you in the future.
Yeah. We're trying to build a brand at Rust Belt Capital, and that is we're a legitimate, very good investment firm, and we're specializing in real estate. And so if a broker hears of us, we want them to think, if Rust Belt gives us a bid, the bid's 100%. There's no BS in it.
Right.
They will close, and they will close fast.
And when that reputation gets out to brokers, then the brokers can have confidence to bring you a deal.
Yep.
And say, hey, I know Steven. He's going to vouch for you to the seller and say, I've done business with him. I know how he operates. And that's huge. Now, what I want to hit on real quick is, you know, the conversation of like stock market versus real estate market.
Sure.
You know, there's people out here that are like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I agree with the points and the principles that you're talking about that set the real estate market kind of apart from the stock market, but they may not feel capable to then actually go and do those principles. I'm not going to do the due diligence on it. I don't know how to take those three, you know, sheets and make sense of a cash flow scenario and the quality of an asset. So talk about maybe your investors and the seat of a passive investor, how they can still take advantage of that and say, I want to get into real estate, but not have to do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would recommend if you want to have a life, don't do what we do.
So you want to get into real estate.
You want to be a professional investor. Okay. Don't want a life. Anyways, so I'd say, first of all, go look at our website, rustbeltcapital.com, first page, go down to the bottom, and it kind of tells you a very short synopsis of everything we just talked about here. And it says, if you don't want another full-time job, outsource it, and then it's an investment, right?
Yeah, right.
So go find, if you want to be involved in something like this, go find a legitimate investment firm first that does real estate if you want real estate as an asset.
Which makes sense because people have, you know, Charles Schwab, they have advisors.
Raymond James.
Yeah, so that this is not like a new concept.
And
yeah.
Those people probably don't have as much credentialism in terms of like most of your stockbrokers or financial advisors that you go to, if you ask them about the income statement, cash flow statement, and balance sheet, they have no idea what the heck they're looking at.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's kind of concerning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a lot of them just have a Series 7, Series 65, which state, whatever. Or maybe they got like some financial planning, whatever. And it's like, okay, that's good. It's better than nothing, but I don't know. Anyways, so then do your due diligence on them. Due diligence just means research, right? So do your research on the investment firm or investment house that you're working with.
Yeah.
For us, you can look at our case studies. You can request access to pitch books or pitch decks on deals that we've done. You can call us up, Nate or I or somebody else will walk you through the properties. You can look at them and stuff like that. And we're not going to hide anything from you. Mm-hmm. So.
And essentially, yeah, what you're doing when you're looking into somebody like that, if you've identified, like, I want to be into real estate, I don't necessarily want to be the one, you know, trying to establish a relationship with the brokers, calling the bank, you know, repositioning a property, making sure that people pay their rent on time, find somebody who's doing that, and then figure out how to, you know, you're investing in that person, that operator. So ask those questions of, you know, their track record, their success. So awesome.
That's sweet. Good. All right, we're going to jump into our smaller pocket segment. So, Steven, this is the part of the show where you get to tell us about your worst deal in real estate. What went wrong? What was kind of the result after you tried to maybe fix it? And really, what can our investors and our listeners learn from your mistake?
From your pain.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a little bit of a contrarian answer to this one. Yeah, there's been... not so much in real estate, bad deals that I've done, maybe in the stock market, bad investments or whatever, but there's things that stick out in my mind a lot when people say, what's your worst investment? And,
okay.
And there's one that sticks out in my mind really good. And it's a
cryptocurrency.
Yes. No. It's actually two, a couple properties that I knew I should buy. I knew I should buy.
Interesting.
You run this through the numbers.
Yeah.
And you're like, I've been researching things. I know I feel like I know, but it's a little bit of fear.
Yeah.
A little bit of fear stopped me from buying a 12 unit, one bedroom or whatever type apartment complex. And then it also stopped me from buying a 4 or 5 unit, townhouse. Property or whatever.
Small multifamily.
Yeah. And, I look at that and I look at where it was then versus where it is today. And it's
the opportunity cost.
I mean, lost hundreds of thousands, man.
Wow.
From not doing that. But
so what was the fear at the time that kind of put you in that paralysis mode and made you pass on it?
So when it comes to investing or anything in life, like, we're humans, so we don't have 100% information. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make decisions with imperfect information.
Right.
Okay.
That's true.
So you can't be 100% certain that something's going to go the way it's going to go before you make the decision. And so that being so risk averse naturally, it stopped me from making those investments. And it's like, okay, extrapolate it today, do a couple refis, stuff like that. And what it could be today. I mean, it's that's a lot of money now that you actually missed out on because you let fear or uncertainty stop you from actually doing these deals. And I think a lot of times people, when they have this question to them, what's your worst investment? Okay. Yeah. There's going to be a bad investment. Okay. Right, of course.
It's a matter of when, not if.
Yeah. It's not going to go exactly your way or whatever, but sometimes they kind of overlook the, you know what to do and you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one you should be the most mad about.
Mm-hmm. That's we've never had a guest answer or give kind of a story on that side of things where it's the deal that I didn't buy.
And it's stuck in my head.
And sometimes it's even the reverse. They're like, man, the best deal I ever did was the one I passed on because they were trying to shove it into this box and make it work.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of two sides to that coin. But yeah, that's interesting. Well, and sometimes it's the limiting beliefs. You know, we're not confident enough maybe in our own underwriting, or maybe it was earlier on in your career and you just weren't confident enough in what you were doing. And it's kind of that limiting belief, like, I'm not good enough, or I don't have enough knowledge yet, or I don't have enough background yet to jump into a property like that.
Yeah,
but sometimes inaction is your worst enemy.
It's costly.
Fear is, don't let fear make the decision for you. You're going to make a decision either way. Mm-hmm. Don't let fear make that decision.
Make it
for
an
you.
Objective one.
Yeah,
right?
make it on your own.
Yeah. Great, great, great. All right, man, we're going to go into what we call a little nugget. So what is one practical takeaway or piece of advice that our listeners can implement into their investing businesses?
Okay. I think the biggest thing to take away is like, keep it simple, and it's those three core principles. If you want to be successful in investing, it's really simple.
And this is investing
generally
across the board.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Stock market, real estate, whatever. You need good assets. So figure out how do you identify a good asset.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to use leverage.
Yep.
And then you need to give it time. And most people don't give it time. They're worried about making pennies instead of making dollars. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather make dollars instead of pennies.
Do those principles apply to finding like a partner?
Like a life partner?
Got to find a good asset.
Absolutely, yeah.
You got to have time. Use a little leverage. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, that's
took
good.
A turn.
It did. I apologize. I went.
Probably so.
So
I don't know.
With where you're at in your investing career, now that you've kind of, you're heavy into real estate now, what percentage of maybe your investment funds do you still have within the stock market?
I do pretty much 70-30. 70% real estate, 30% equities.
That you really put the screws to him.
People, no matter what, are going to say, well, I should keep some money in the stock market to diversify. And absolutely.
Yeah.
We're not saying you take everything out of the stock market.
That's true.
And you only go into real estate. But I mean, for you, obviously it's your profession. It's what you're doing. So obviously you're heavier in real estate.
Keep a couple hundred there and that provides you some liquidity. I use that more as like a liquidity backstop, or kind of like a not quite a bank account, but sort of like that.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked to even investors who have lines of credit. You know, I mean, they've got things set up that provide that. And that's, you know, that's true liquidity, right? That's actual equity is owning stock. It's a little different than having a line of credit, but each of those tools are tools on your tool belt. But understanding how the pieces fit together for the whole, it's intentional, the 30% that you have on the stock market. Mm-hmm. It just didn't shake out that way. There's a reason you have that, that amount in there. Hey, in closing here, what's been one of the biggest resources that's helped you in your real estate career?
Biggest resource that's helped me in my real estate career? That's a good question.
If you want to say this podcast, you can, but I'm not forcing you to.
The Reinvest podcast.
Hey.
Definitely. You should definitely listen to this.
Shameless plug.
Absolutely. I don't know if there's been one real estate.
Or maybe your investing career as a whole.
Yeah. In terms of investing, is like I took a couple investment banking courses and they taught about financial modeling, what cash flow is, free cash flow is. And like once you get to that, then figure out the most simple way to do it. So
are those courses that anybody could take? Like, is there a master class on investment banking, or are those college courses that you've got to commit to a degree?
Definitely not college courses. They do take an enormous amount of time to get through, and they're expensive, but just go online, Google some, you'll find some. What was the one that I took? I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was expensive.
We'll get it from you afterwards. We'll give you a chance to look it up.
Okay.
And then we'll put that one in the show notes just to have a,
in case
kind of
someone
a
wants
for,
to be insane and get on and do that.
Yeah.
And be like you. They could be the next Steven Spec.
Oh boy.
You alluded to this earlier, but how can people follow your success?
Yeah, if you want to learn more about me or Rust Belt Capital, you can go to our website, rustbeltcapital.com. In the footer, you can subscribe to once a week. I send out a weekly update email. It might be an update on the market. It might be information. It might be how do we make money in real estate, and how do we do forced appreciation, stuff like that.
I get those updates. I get a lot of updates from different sponsors, you know, different companies and stuff. I really enjoy yours. Like they're applicable. They're short. So I would definitely, you know, that would be a good way to, for somebody to start.
He says that to all of our real estate guests.
Yeah. Darn it.
I'm not just saying this to you, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, and then I think we got a YouTube channel. RBC is the YouTube channel.
Awesome.
Cool. And you're on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll put all that in the show description and that way people can check you out. But yeah, we really appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.